Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you so much for coming this morning, and thank you for the opportunity to share something with you. Praying for blessings and permission from all the senior devotees who are here. It's quite humbling to speak in front of all of you. But I'll try to share some thoughts as we continue reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So today we're reading from Madhya Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter number 7, entitled The Lord's Tour of South India. And we're reading from text number 38 and 39. So 39 is on the board, so I'll just quickly read 38 and then we'll do 39 together. So just for the context, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is preparing to travel to South India. When along the way you fall unconscious in ecstatic love of Godhead, who will protect your belongings, the water pot, garments, and so forth? So the context is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is traveling to South India, and he says he wants to go alone, but all of his associates are trying to convince him that he needs to take someone with him, and they're all putting forward themselves as potential candidates to go. Who would not want to go? Okay, so we're reading from text number 39. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Lesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sri Nityananda Prabhu continued, "Here is a simple brahmana named Krishnadas. Please accept him and take him with you. That is my request." Purport. This Krishnadas, known as Kala Krishnadas, is not the Kala Krishnadas mentioned in the 11th chapter, verse 37 of the Adi Lila. The Kala Krishnadas mentioned in the 11th chapter is one of the 12 Gopalas, cowherd boys, who appear to substantiate the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is known as a great devotee of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. The brahmana named Kala Krishnadas, who went with Sri Chaitanya to South India and later to Bengal, is mentioned in the Madhya Lila 10th chapter, verses 62 to 79. One should not take these two to be the same person. Srila Prabhupada Ki. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is preparing to go to South India. It's like the calm before the storm. Everyone is sensing that there's going to be something explosive happening when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to South India. Mahaprabhu has said, no, it's not a big thing. I'm only going to South India just to find my brother, Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop had taken sannyas very early. He had gone, and no one knew where he was. So Mahaprabhu said, no, I'm just going to find him. I'll go alone. It's a low-key trip. The devotees knew, they sensed it. Something amazing is going to happen. Something explosive is going to happen. Somehow, devotees have this kind of sixth sense, isn't it? Like even Parikshit got cursed, and then he decided, I'm going to walk to the Ganga. And somehow or other, without any communication, all these sages, all these saints, all these rishis all descended there because somehow they knew something amazing is going to happen. So here they're all trying to convince Mahaprabhu to take someone with him. They want to go themselves. He's not acquiescing to that. Finally, they put Kala Krishnadas forward because they know it's going to be explosive. Actually, in 1996, it was Prabhupada's centennial. So it was a huge festival in Mayapur. All the devotees had come. And it was a few days before Gaur Purnima, and there was class in the temple. So it was completely packed. All the devotees were there. Everyone was anticipating Gaur Purnima coming up. And His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was giving the class. And so His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj began speaking, and he said, maybe your GBCs didn't tell you. Maybe your temple presidents, maybe your leaders didn't tell you that we've all brought you here to Mayapur for some reason, but maybe they didn't tell you what that reason was. And now let me tell you that the reason we brought you all together is to tell you that we're about to drop a bomb on the planet. The bomb of Harinam Sankirtan. Harinam Sankirtan ki jaya. And then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just went into this inspired vision. He says, yes, we're going to drop the bomb of Harinam Sankirtan. There's going to be an explosion on the earth. All the malefic influences will flee. Mother Bhumi will begin rocking. And as Mother Bhumi begins rocking, Narad will rush into the universe and say, what's going on here? And as Narad comes into the universe, then Lord Shiva will look at Parvati and says, is this the annihilation? Is the annihilation of the universe already happening? It was such a beautiful vision of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who said, yes, there's going to be an explosion. We're dropping the bomb of Harinam Sankirtan. And that's exactly what Mahaprabhu was coming to do. Of course, dropping the bomb of Harinam Sankirtan in South India, that was the second wave. That was the second wave. The first wave was that Mahaprabhu already dropped the bomb. He already dropped the bomb in Navadvip after he had come back from Gaya, inspired. Japite japite mantra, korite pagal, chanting the Maha Mantra, becoming mad, and landing in Navadvip. And as soon as he came to Navadvip, then all the Panchatattva knew Mahaprabhu is going to begin the Harinam Sankirtan explosion. And so Kaviraj Goswami explains, Se Panchatattva mili pithivi ashiya purva prema bandarera mudra ugadiya. Se Panchatattva mili, all of those five personalities, they came together. Prithivi Ashiya, on this earth planet. Purva Prema Bandarera, Krishna had come before and he had already brought the treasure house of love, Mudra Ugadiya, but the special contribution of the Panchatattva was that they broke open the seal to that treasure house. Pacha mili lute prem kore ashvadhan, jata jata piya Krishna bade anukshan. Pancha Tattva Mili. What they did is they came together, and what did they do? Lute Prema. They broke open, they plundered it. Kore Ashvadhan, and they started tasting that love of Godhead. Jata Jata Piya Trishna. And as they drank that love of Godhead, Bade Anukshan, their thirst grew even more. This is completely inconceivable. If you're hungry and there's food in front of you, then you eat the food disappears, and your hunger disappears. Right? That's the modus operandi. The Panchatattva were thirsty for love of Godhead. So here they were thirsty, and there was love of Godhead, the treasure house that Krishna had formerly brought, but they opened it up. And what happened? As soon as they started drinking from the treasure house of love of Godhead, the Prema Bandarera, what happened? The stock of the treasure increased and their thirst increased. This is spiritual mathematics, completely inconceivable. So in this way, the Panchatattva came together. Kaviraj Goswami goes on to explain, Uchalila prema vanya chodeka vidoi, shri vridha balak juva sabare duboi, that Uchalila Prema Vanya, this wave of love. Prema Vanya, this wave of love. Chodaka Vidoi, it went in all directions. Shtri, women. Vridha, old men. Balak, young boys. Yuva, adolescents. Sabare Duboi, they all drowned. They all drowned in love of Krishna. So this is Mahaprabhu, he just set the whole of Navadvip alight with the Harinam Sankirtan. But now what was he doing? He was going to South India because he wanted to expand the vision. He wanted to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. And in South India, what would Mahaprabhu do? He would broaden the mission but he would also deepen the mission. When you want to spread Krishna consciousness, when you want to expand the mercy, when you want to inflate this movement so that it goes everywhere, then we have to go broad. We have to learn how to connect with people. We have to learn to open the doors so that everyone can come in. And then once they come in, we also have to deepen the mission. So it has to touch their heart. People have to become touched by the Krishna consciousness movement. They have to become touched by this process. They have to become touched by the holy name. And ultimately, they have to become touched by the beautiful, smiling glance of Krishna. So Mahaprabhu, he did both. When he went to South India, he broadened the mission. And he also deepened the mission. This is how you spread. When he went South India, he stopped in Kurmastan. And in Kurmastan, there was the Brahmana, there was Vasudev, the leper. What did Mahaprabhu do? He broadened the mission. He said, it doesn't matter that you're a householder. Jare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Just wherever you are, stane stita, shruti gatam, tanuvan manobir. With your words, with your mind, with your activities, just worship Krishna. Vasudev, the leper, was diseased. Mahaprabhu said, it doesn't matter, just chant. He broadened the mission. He said, there's no barriers, there's no qualification, there's no limitation. Everyone can do it. From Kurmastan, Mahaprabhu went to Godavari. Godavari is an interesting place. It literally means a confluence or a convergence. Godavari is a place where many rivers meet. So in Godavari, it wasn't just a meeting place or a convergence of rivers, a confluence of rivers. Godavari was a place where all the ideas of what people have in terms of what Shastra is prescribing, all of those ideas came together through the conversation with Ramananda Rai. All the ideas of what the Vedas is prescribing, all of those ideas converged. And finally, Ramananda Rai revealed what is the essence of it all. Not only did he reveal what is the essence of it all, but he revealed the most confidential rasas that Krishna has with his devotees. And so in this way, in Kurmastan, the mission was broadened. In Godavari, the mission was deepened. Mahaprabhu continued preaching. He came to a place called Trimada. And in Trimada, Mahaprabhu met the Buddhists. So the Buddhist philosophy of Shunyavad. So Mahaprabhu began to discourse with the Buddhists, and then finally he defeated all their arguments. So they thought, we couldn't defeat him philosophically. If you can't defeat someone, then at least you should defame them. So what they did is they brought a plate of unoffered food and they tried to trick Mahaprabhu into taking that unoffered food. And just as they were about to give Mahaprabhu the unoffered food, then an eagle, I think it's an eagle, came and took that plate. A crow? Was it a crow? It was a crow then. And took that plate and then basically emptied it above the heads of the Buddhists. So they had all the unoffered food on their head. And then finally the crow also released the plate itself and it went spinning into the head of the Buddhist leader. That's probably the most violent pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Finally they all surrendered. See, Mahaprabhu broadened it again. He said, okay, even open the doors for those who preach nothingness, who preach nihilism, Shunyavad, even they can come in. Mahaprabhu traveled. He went further. He went to Sri Rangam, the seat of the Sri Vaishnavas. And in Sri Rangam, Mahaprabhu had the famous conversation with Vyankata Bhatta, isn't it? And he was trying to establish a very deep point, a very deep philosophical point that most people in South India had not understood. And what was that point that he wanted to establish? Siddhantatastva bedepi shrisha krishna swarupayo rasenot krishyate krishna rupam esha rasastiti. Vishnu and Krishna in Siddhanta tvabede, there's no difference. There's no difference between Krishna and Vishnu in Siddhanta. Rasanot krishyate Krishna. But when it comes to rasa, rupam esha rasa stiti, then Krishna as Rasa Raj, he cannot be surpassed. And so in this way, Mahaprabhu deepened the understanding in Sri Rangam that no, yes, there is a Supreme Lord, but it's not just a relationship of awe and reverence. It's love, it's intimacy, it's confidentiality. And in this way, he deepened the mission. And then here we hear about Kala Krishna Das. Mahaprabhu traveled along. He went to a place called Baitapani. And in Baitapani, there were what today we would call travelers or gypsies, in those times known as Bataharis. And they lured Kala Krishna Das. And what did Mahaprabhu do? Very, very merciful. He came and he grabbed Kala Krishna Das by the sika. And one good reason to have a sika. And he pulled him out and he saved him. Again, broadening the mission, making it available. Okay, you make a mistake, no problem. There's always a way out. The Lord will never leave you. Very interesting, isn't it? As Mahaprabhu is traveling across South India, he's broadening and deepening, broadening and deepening, broadening and deepening. Broaden it in Kurukshetra, deepen it in Godavari. Broaden it in Trimala, deepen it in Sri Rangam. Broaden it in Baitapani, and like this, all the time. So for those preachers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, this we have to think about very, very deeply, that this is what Mahaprabhu did. Krishna Consciousness is not just about reaching many, many people, but it's about helping those people that we reach to also find Krishna. Because when they find Krishna, then they will be empowered to reach many, many more people. This is the beautiful purpose of this movement. So it's amazing. Mahaprabhu was just traveling, isn't it? You see all the great teachers over the ages, they all traveled, right? How did Buddhism spread? Because Emperor Ashoka, what he did is he sent Buddhist missionaries and they went everywhere. The Buddhist missionaries went, they walked and they went to Thailand, they went to China, they went to Sri Lanka, they even went as far as Greece. And they went all over India, and India just completely became overcome by Buddhism. Because the preachers traveled and carried that message with them to every town and village. And then what happened after the Buddhists had spread their influence in India? Then Shankaracharya came. And what did he do? He also traveled. At the age of 8, he took sannyas. And then he went to Benares to study all the Vedanta Sutra, the Prasthana Trayi. And there in Benares, Shankaracharya, he wrote the commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Sharirak Abhasya. And after writing that commentary on Vedanta Sutra, at the age of 16, Shankaracharya started traveling. He traveled for 16 years, from 16 to 32. And what did he do? He traveled all across India. He went as north as Badrinath. He went east to Jagannath Puri. He went south to Badrinath. He went west to Dwarka. He covered the whole gamut of India by traveling and by speaking. He spread the Mayavad philosophy. Mayavadam asachastram prachanam bodhamuchyate mayeva nihitam devi kalobrahmanamurtina. This was his purpose. Lord Shiva said, I'll come as a brahmana and I'll spread Mayavad. And Prabhupada says, by his traveling and preaching around India, Shankaracharya drove out Buddhism. He drove out Buddhism by his powerful teaching of Mayavad. So Ashoka traveled, spread Buddhism. Shankaracharya traveled, spread Mayavad. And then what happened? The Vaishnava Acharyas came. isn't it? Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and what did they? They did the same. They traveled, they established maths. All these great teachers. Vallabhacharya. Vallabhacharya was a very, very great teacher. He traveled, if you see where he traveled across India, he traveled everywhere. And he established 84 Baitaks. You know what a Baitak is? It's literally, he would walk. And then what he would do is in a town, he would just stop in a place, usually like under a tree or something. There was no advanced party to set up a pandal program or, you know, do the prior arrangements. He would just walk into a place, sit under a tree, Baitak, and sit down. And what would he do? Harikatha. He'd just speak about Krishna. And he would just sit there for days and just speak about Krishna. One person came, four people came, 10 people came, hundreds of people came. The whole village ended up coming just to hear Harikatha from the words of a pure devotee. Vayam tu na vitripyama uttama shloka vikrame yachrinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade. The saintly, they never tire. Vayam tu na vitripyama, they never tire. Uttama shloka vikrame, to speak about uttama shloka. Why? Because when they speak about Krishna, yachrinvatam rasagyanam, they're not just speaking knowledge. They're not just speaking information. They're not just speaking facts and figures. Yachrinvatam rasa jnanam. They're tasting that knowledge. They're experiencing that knowledge. They've internalized that knowledge. And when they deliver that knowledge with the purity of their own heart, with the purity of their own conviction, with the incredible realization that they have gained from that wisdom, and people hear it, then it touches their hearts. So that's what Vallabhacharya did. And he established all of these, I think it's 84 Baitaks all across India, where he spoke Harikatha. Harikatha coming from the words of a sadhu, you cannot imagine how powerful it is. You may see, go to the Goshala and you may see a bull working hard, isn't it? The bulls work hard, moving, pulling, tilling the fields. And then you look at the cows. I mean, the cows, they're often just sitting around. Hardly you see them standing up. Most of the time they're sitting down. And what are they doing? They're not moving at all. The cows are just sitting there. The only thing that's moving is their mouth, because they're chewing grass. And you think, look at the bulls are doing all the work. The bulls are doing all the work. What are the cows doing? Well, you don't see them moving or doing anything. They're just sitting down and their mouth is just moving. Mouth is just moving. But what are they doing? By that chewing of the grass, what is happening? The milk is forming. And then the cow gives the milk which nourishes the whole universe. Just by that chewing, they provide the most valuable thing to the world. So you may see a sadhu just speaking. And you think, come on, do something practical. But just the chewing of Harikatha, yachrinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade shishiradha gokulananda ki cha. Just by that, so much is happening. So Vallabhacharya, he just had these Baitaks where he sat down. Sometimes you wonder, why is it that Vallabhacharya is so famous in Gujarat? Isn't it? All the Gujaratis follow Vallabhacharya, Pushti Marg. Vallabhacharya was not from Gujarat. Vallabhacharya was from South India. Telugu family, right? Telugu lineage. How come all the Gujaratis are so connected to Vallabhacharya? Because if you look at the map of all the Baitaks where Vallabhacharya spoke, then where will you find the greatest concentration of places where he spoke? In Gujarat. And because he spoke there. Because when the sadhu speaks in a place, they create a community. Isn't it? Bhagavatam says, Yatre dhyante katham rishtas trishnaya prashamo gata nirveiram yatra bhuteshu nodvego yatra kaschana. Yatre dhyante, wherever the Krishna katha is going on, people become non-envious, people are able to cooperate with each other, work together, and they form loving relationships, loving community based around the vibration of Hari Katha. And so this is what Vallabhacharya did. He just traveled. So isn't it amazing? Over history, you see, everything was spread by those who traveled and carried the message within their hearts and minds and delivered it. All the great devotees traveled in this way. Even our current devotees in the here and now, they're traveling, isn't it, so much. Apparently Jayaprataka Maharaj was in the Guinness Book of World Records because in 1 year he took 170 flights. Just think about that for a second. Nearly one flight every 3 days, 2.5 days. Traveling. Even Godruma Prabhu, our dear Godruma Prabhu, he's done 300,000 miles in his Volkswagen Passat. You know how much 300,000 miles is? That's 14 times around the earth. I told him, be careful, you might think about your car at the time of death, you know. It's like, he spent a lot of time in that car. You know, devotees are traveling, sharing, giving, Hari Katha. Prabhupada traveled, isn't it? Prabhupada traveled so much. One devotee said, Prabhupada, I just want to stay at your lotus feet. Prabhupada said, it will be very difficult because I'm always moving. So Prabhupada was just traveling. Anyone know? From 1965 to 1977, Prabhupada was traveling many, many places. Does anyone know the city that he spent the most time in? Los Angeles, London, Bombay. Any other takers? London, New York, Melbourne, Mayapur. Well, let me give you a clue. Prabhupada said, Vrindavan is my home. Mayapur is my place of worship. And Bombay is my office. So where do you think Prabhupada spent the most time? At home? In his place of worship? Or in the office? In the office. Prabhupada spent the most amount of time in Mumbai. More than any other place he traveled in the world. In a total of 12 years, Prabhupada spent 477 days in Mumbai. At one point, Prabhupada spent 100 days in a row in Mumbai. He'd never done that in any other places. Interesting, isn't it? Prabhupada said, Bombay is my office. That's where I do my work. Yes, Prabhupada was traveling everywhere. But Vrindavan was his home. Whenever he would travel anywhere, Prabhupada would always introduce himself, I am coming from Vrindavan. Because yes, Vrindavan was Prabhupada's home, right there with Krishna, right there in the land of the Supreme Lord. Mayapur was Prabhupada's place of worship. Anyone have any insights? Why do you think Prabhupada said Mayapur was his place of worship? Vrindavan as his home, you can understand. Mumbai as his office, you can understand. But why did Prabhupada say Mayapur is my place of worship? Anyone have an idea? Yes.
One can be at the home at the same time.
Yeah, that was my also initial thought, that we hear in the Bhagavatam that Krishna Varnam Tisakrishnam Sangopangastraparshadam Yadgye Sankirtane Prayer Yajantihi Sumedasha. That the yagya for this age is Sankirtan, and Sankirtan was inaugurated in Mayapur, as we mentioned. And therefore, yeah, perhaps that's why Prabhupada said that Mayapur was his place of worship. I had another idea, but maybe someone else. Yeah, Govinda?
Well, a humble person thinks, I will worship in a place where aparads are not taken so seriously. So maybe that's why he preferred Mayapur.
Yes, Mayapur Dham is known as Audarya Dham, the place of great magnanimity. So no offenses, you get great benefit. It's just said that just by lying down in Navadvip Dham, you're paying obeisances. And that's very nice. Yes.
Is it because, you know, before he went off on his mission, he went to Mayapur to, you know, seek empowerment. And actually, no, he went to Mayapur and Shantipur as well, isn't it?
Yes.
So, I don't know if...
But it was close, what you're saying, to what I was thinking. Why Mayapur was also the place of worship for Prabhupada, yeah. Yes, yes, that was my thought. That Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Samadhi is there, and as you mentioned, before Prabhupada came to America, he went to Mayapur for a special visit, and he came to the Samadhi of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he prayed for blessings, for empowerment. Yes. Someone else wanted to say something? So yes, Vrindavan was Prabhupada's home, Mayapur was his place of worship, and Mumbai was his office. That's where he was doing his work to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. These are the most important cities in the world, Mumbai, London, New York, the gateways through which one can infiltrate and reach many, many people. And so Prabhupada was... spending time in every place strategically. Every place that Prabhupada traveled to, he had a strategic, something strategic that was happening there. So I was thinking about this, the home, the place of worship, and the office. So if you were to say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was in many, many places, what would you say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's home is? Srivasangam, Orissa, what would you say Mahaprabhu's home is? Prabhupada's home was Vrindavan. What's Mahaprabhu's home? Jagannath Puri. So we got a lot of different answers here. What would you say his place of worship is? Jagannath Puri. Vrindavan. Are you saying Vrindavan? Okay. What would you say his office is? South India? Mayapur? Okay, so we all, it seems like we're completely not in agreement. I don't say this as a definitive thing, but this is my reflection. If we were to say what is Mahaprabhu's home, what is his place of worship, and what is his office, my understanding would be that Mahaprabhu's home is Mayapur. Because... Nitya Navadvip, Goloka Navadvip, in the spiritual world, Mahaprabhu in his eternal pastimes, isn't it? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes a book, Gauranga Ashta Kaliya Leela, the eternal pastimes of Mahaprabhu going on in the transcendent reality. And in that poem, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning what goes on in Mahaprabhu's daily pastimes. And Mahaprabhu's daily pastimes in the transcendent realm go on in Navadvip. They go on in the Nitya Navadvip, the Goloka Navadvip, the spiritual form of Navadvip. So in this way we can say that yes, Mahaprabhu's eternal pastimes are in Navadvip. Mahaprabhu's eternal age is as a grihastha in Nadia. And Mahaprabhu's eternal associates are the ones there. The eternal pastimes are the ones taking place. He explains in this poem of Mahaprabhu's day and how he wakes up and how he interacts with Vishnu Priya and then how he goes to Srivas Anga and then has Sankirtan there. All these things are explained. So perhaps we could say Mahaprabhu's home is Mayapur. Mahaprabhu's place of worship, I think we would say Jagannath Puri, because that's where Mahaprabhu goes deepest into his bhajan. Jagannath is Krishna in separation from Radharani. Mahaprabhu is Radha in separation of Krishna. And so when Mahaprabhu comes to Jagannath Puri, when Krishna who's in separation from Radharani and Radharani who's in separation from Krishna, when they come together, that connection is the deepest bhajan, the deepest experience of intimate, intense, loving connection. This is what bhajan is. Bhajan means an absorbed meditation on the Supreme Lord. And so where was Mahaprabhu's most intense, absorbed meditation on the Supreme Lord? That we can say is in Jagannath Puri, because Jagannath Puri is Viraha Kshetra, the place of deep separation. And where is Mahaprabhu's office then? If his home is Mayapur, if his place of worship is Jagannath Puri, my understanding would be that Mahaprabhu has two offices. One is South India for sure, and the other office is Vrindavan. Because Mahaprabhu, when he wants to spread the movement, when he wants to display the incredible potency of Harinam Sankirtan in its ability to transform mass numbers of people, then he does that in South India. But when he wants to establish his movement for generations to come, then what does? He sends his devotees to Vrindavan. Of course, he visits Vrindavan as well, and he excavates many of the holy places. And in Vrindavan, Mahaprabhu's movement is established, because Mahaprabhu tells the Goswamis, Bhakta Bhakti Krishna Prem Tatvera Nidhar Vaishnavera Kritya Ar Vaishnava Achar Krishna Bhakti Krishna Seva Seva Pravartan Lupta Tirtha Udhara Ar Vairagya Shikshan. When you go to Vrindavan, you do these things. You write books. You show ideal Vaishnav character. You excavate the holy places. You show the example of renunciation. And you establish temples where people can come and worship the Supreme Lord. And so we can say the movement of Mahaprabhu is established in Vrindavan. And South India is like a trailer. South India is like a trailer of what the Harinam Sankirtan movement can do. So of course, Mahaprabhu traveled in South India, and we're going to, in the coming weeks, learn all about this. Mahaprabhu traveled for 2 years. In 2 years, you know how many miles it was to travel from Jagannath Puri all the way round South India and come back to Jagannath Puri? Anyone know how many miles that would be? Many. Yes, many miles. Anyone know? How many miles Mahaprabhu walked in 2 years? 83 what? 83 miles? That's like from here to Leicester. There's a little bit more. 10,000? 4,000. 4,000 miles. Mahaprabhu was walking 4,000 miles in 2 years. But if you consider in those 2 years, for the 4 months of the Chaturmasya, the sannyasis don't move. They stay in one place. So practically he was only walking for 16 months. In 16 months, he covered 4,000 miles. If you do the maths, he was basically walking about 8 miles every single day. I mean, on average. And what was he doing? Just going from place to place and infecting people with Harinam Sankirtan. Later on, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had a mission to go. He started doing a tour of South India, And what he wanted to establish is something called Padapithas. He wanted to go to all the places where Mahaprabhu had stopped and establish the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu to recognize that this was a place that Mahaprabhu stopped on his travels in South India. Unfortunately, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur only managed to install 8. He wanted to install 108, and later on many of his disciples installed more. But you can go to India today. In Godavari, for example, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established Mahaprabhu's lotus feet there to honor that Mahaprabhu had come here. So Mahaprabhu traveled across South India. And of course, sometimes the question is coming that if it was such an explosion, if it was such an outpouring of Krishna Prem that took place when Mahaprabhu went to South India, then why don't we see the remnants of that now? Why has it disappeared? Why is it that when you go to South India, you don't see the influence of Gaudiya Vaishnavism as you see in other places? And the answer is clear, because Mahaprabhu, when he went to South India, he didn't establish leaders there who would continue on his movement, and he didn't structure his movement there. So then one may say, if Mahaprabhu went to South India and he had no intention to start a movement there, why did he go in the first place? What was the point? He went there, it was nice, he did an explosion, but then there was nothing after that. So what was the purpose of it all? 2 years. What's the effect of it? But we must understand that the Supreme Lord has a different agenda in every place. When Mahaprabhu wanted to establish the movement, he knew where he wanted to do it. He wanted to do it in Vrindavan, because Vrindavan was the place that the movement, if established there, would act as a hub for generations to come. So he knew Vrindavan was the place to start the movement. But why did Mahaprabhu go to South India? Because many things happened in South India which were also significant for the Sankirtan movement. One of the most significant things that happened in South India was the conversations that Mahaprabhu had. The conversations which he had established the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And so those conversations stood for generations to come as a guiding light and an entrance into Gaudiya Vaishnava theology. And so this was very, very valuable. Mahaprabhu had many, many conversations. It's interesting that many people know of Mahaprabhu as the saint who spread the holy name everywhere. But many people don't appreciate that Mahaprabhu was also an incredible philosopher. Mahaprabhu was able to defeat all the logicians, the Sanskritists, the grammarians in Navadvip. He was a great philosopher. Not only that, Mahaprabhu was able to interface and speak with all religions. Is that right? He spoke to the Muslims. He spoke to the Buddhists. He spoke, apparently in the Odia manuscript, there's also an account that Mahaprabhu even met Guru Nanak from the Sikh tradition. Mahaprabhu didn't only speak with philosophers, he spoke with all religions. Not only that, Mahaprabhu spoke with all the Vaishnava Sampradayas. Isn't it? The 4 Vaishnava Sampradayas, Mahaprabhu had conversations with individuals in each one of those Sampradayas. Ramanuja Sampradaya, who did Mahaprabhu converse with? Sri Sampradaya. Venkatabhatta in Sri Rangam. Where did Mahaprabhu interface with the Madhvas? Which place? Udupi. Where did Mahaprabhu interface with someone from the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya? Anyone know? I mentioned already in this talk. Yes? Vallabhacharya, yes. He met Vallabhacharya in Jagannath Puri. who then created the Pushti Marg, which is another branch from the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. And Mahaprabhu also met someone from the Nimbarka Sampradaya. Anyone know who that is? It's not explicitly mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but when we find out more information about this individual, we find out he's from the Nimbarka. Keshav Kashmiri, yes, very good. So Mahaprabhu, isn't it amazing? He spoke with all the philosophers, he spoke with all the religions, he spoke with all the Vaishnav Sampradayas, he spoke with the non-Vaishnav Sampradayas, the Mayavadis, others. And then Mahaprabhu spoke with his own devotees to go to the depths of Gaudiya theology. So Mahaprabhu, one of the main effects of preaching in South India was the conversations that he had. Not just that, one of the other great achievements in South India was Mahaprabhu met individuals who would later become very key to his mission. One of those individuals, as we know, Ramananda Rai, who later on joined Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri and together with Swarup Damodar helped Mahaprabhu to experience what he wanted to experience internally. Not only that, in Sri Rangam, Mahaprabhu met Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who later on became one of the leaders of his movement. So see, Mahaprabhu was also meeting key people who would later on help him in his mission. Not only that, in South India, Mahaprabhu also discovered very important literatures, isn't it? Mahaprabhu discovered which two literatures? Brahma Samhita and Krishna Karanamrita. These two literatures are very important because Brahma Samhita is establishing so much tattva, right? So much philosophical, ontological truth. It's an incredibly priceless scripture because it establishes all the tattvas. Firstly, first and foremost, it establishes Krishna tattva. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Ishvara Parama Krishna. That's powerful. The Brahma Samhita is establishing Krishna tattva. Not just that, Brahma Samhita establishes Shiva tattva. Kshiram Yatha Dadi Vishesha Yogat. Not only that, Brahma Samhita is establishing the tattva of demigods. Not only that, Brahma Samhita is establishing the tattva of the Srishti, the material creation. So much philosophy, truth, ontological insight is given through Brahma Samhita. So that becomes a very, very important literature. And Krishna Karanamrita, literally the nectarian pastimes that are pleasing to Krishna's ears. I mean, I guess it could be translated in different ways, but all about rasa, Krishna's identity in Vrindavan, Krishna's appearance in Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So do you see, even though Mahaprabhu didn't establish a movement in South India, still, the tour of South India was very, very important because many, many other important events and occurrences happened which were very, very important for his movement going forward. So in this way, Mahaprabhu indeed traveled to all of these places, and this had a very, very special part in his pastimes. Yes, Mayapur was his home, Jagannath Puri was his place of worship, and South India was definitely his office because this is where he achieved many, many things for the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay, maybe I'll stop there and open up and see whether anyone has any questions, comments, anything that you would like clarification.
Thank you for the class. I was wondering, one time you mentioned Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Another time I heard that the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is Brahma Samhita. I just wanted to confirm what is it?
Yeah. Well, I guess Krishna consciousness is like that. You can. There are many, many devotees who are the topmost devotees, isn't it? Like, for example, we hear Prahlad Maharaj is Bhakta Shiromani, the crest jewel of all Vaishnavas. But then we also sometimes hear Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yathasambhu. He's the foremost of Vaishnavas. But then sometimes we hear the gopis of Vrindavan. No, who can surpass them in devotion? So every devotee is carrying something special. In one sense, we could say all of those statements are true, transcendentally the same and different. With regards to what is the essence of Bhagavatam, yes, as I mentioned, we could say Brahma Samhita is the essence of Bhagavatam in the sense that it reveals the ultimate tattva that the Bhagavatam is trying to reveal. What is the tattva that the Bhagavatam is trying to reveal? Ete chamsha kalapumsha krishnastu bhagavan swayam. So what does Brahma Samhita do? It corroborates that truth. Ishvara parama krishna sachit ananda vigraha anadera adir govinda sarvakarana karanam. So Brahma Samhita builds on the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam and then establishes that tattva, that Krishna is the Adipurush, the original person. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a couple of conversations. It's in two parts. And we could say Bhagavatam is the essence, Bhagavatamrita is the essence of Bhagavatam because it's highlighting the rasa conclusion of the Bhagavatam. What's the rasa conclusion of Bhagavatam? Aradhyo Bhagavan Vraje Satanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam. The Bhagavatam is saying, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that's the tattva. But in rasa is Krishna in Vrindavan. And Krishna in Vrindavan who is worshipped by the gopis. And so what does Brihat Bhagavatamrita do? In the first conversation, the whole journey is to understand who is the topmost devotee. And it arrives at the gopis. And the second conversation is, what is the topmost abode? And it arrives at Goloka Vrindavan. So in that way, Bhagavatamrita establishes the rasa conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Shyamameva param rupam madhu matura puri. I forgot that verse. Not that verse. Dhyaya kaishaurakam. No. Okay, anyway, I forgot it. Shyamameva param rupam. Krishna's form as Shyam Sundar is the highest. Madhu Matura Puri. And Matura is the highest dham. Dhyaya Keshaurakam Dhyayam, something like that. Vaya Keshaurakam Dhyayam Adya Eva Paro Rasa. Yes. Keshaurakam, Krishna's age as a Keshaura, this is the topmost. And Adya Eva Paro Rasa, the Adya Eva, the Shringara Rasa, the Ujvala Rasa, the Madhurya Rasa, the Conjugal Rasa, this is the Param Rasa, this is the highest Rasa. So in that sense, we can say both in different ways, establish the essence of Bhagavatam.
Hare Krishna, thank you for such a deep class. I was just thinking, how will you explain, where will you go from this verse? But it's amazing. Something that you had mentioned, that we had Lord Buddha, he spread Buddhism throughout India as well as other parts of Asia. And we know that Shankaracharya, he spread Mayavadism throughout India. And it's still quite prominent today, and even Buddhism is still quite prominent in other parts of Asia. And I was just wondering, how do we understand that Mahaprabhu was spreading Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but it doesn't seem so strong even in India? I know there is the verse that in every town and village the holy names will be sung, and that's a prediction. So one could think that it's still to come, but I don't know if you've got a, if you thought about that, or if you have a way of explaining why we don't see it so strong in India.
I think they asked that to Prabhupada, no? Like, why did Mahaprabhu not spread it everywhere? And Prabhupada said, because he was leaving something for me and you to do. Of course, Buddhism spread, but over many centuries. Shankaracharya's influence over many centuries. So, of course, we can say, yes, it will take time for the Krishna consciousness movement to expand, for the influence of Gaudiya Vaishnavism to take hold. Although ISKCON in India is booming, isn't it? ISKCON in India, of all spiritual movements, it must be one of the most vibrant. You know, practically every year there is a major temple or two coming up and so many devotees. So it is spreading. Also, Krishna consciousness doesn't always spread in an organized fashion, isn't it? Kadamakana Maharaj, he said, we thought Krishna consciousness would spread like an organized urban city, but actually it's spreading like an African jungle. Isn't it? Like something grows up here, something comes there, then it's like you don't know like how the movement is growing. Pockets of different things happening. And I was thinking the other day that even if you look at what's trending in the world today, meditation, yoga, vegetarianism, karma, reincarnation, these are all like huge concepts which are trending, and how much they are like central to the Krishna consciousness movement. So although we may not say that the movement is spreading like in terms of in a very organized way of temples and congregations, and it is spreading in its own way, and it's a miraculous movement, isn't it? So many amazing things. Miracles were happening in the time of Mahaprabhu. Miracles are happening now. And miracles will continue to happen. It's a miraculous movement. So, yeah, Jason.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add the comment that maybe that's part of our dharma. So I just wanted to add the comment that maybe that's part of our dharma, is to link these trending ideas and bring them to the central message and the centrality, the hub of Krishna.
Yes, yes. Yeah, people are into all of these things, and it's like, then if we're able to introduce them to Shastra, then they can actually get the deepest understanding of these things. Like, people are into karma, but where will you find such an intricate explanation of karma? People are into meditation and the mind, but where you will find so much information about the mind? So, we need someone to make Shastra go mainstream. I was thinking about this recently, that perhaps George Harrison was able to make such a breakthrough because he made the Maha Mantra go mainstream. But so far, we have not been able to connect with someone who's going to manage to make Bhagavatam go mainstream. I have an idea of someone who may be able to do it. But let's see what will transpire. But we need someone to. That if that happens, that would be amazing, because people are into all of these things. But when they access the Shastra, and they see, oh my God, in these books you get the deepest understanding of this. So many people talk about the mind, but who can give you a scientific explanation of the mind? I was thinking, actually, the mind is probably one of our best avenues to connect with the world in terms of outreach. Because in the outside world, it's what everyone is talking about. And in terms of our Shastra, there's such a wealth of information about the mind. It's like a perfect match. So yeah, we pray someone will make Bhagavatam go viral. Anyone else like to? Yeah.
It was an interview of Srila Prabhupada, and one of the questions was, where is your home, Swamiji?
Where is your home?
Yeah, and Prabhupada said, my home is back home, back to Godhead.
Yes. Yeah, again, Prabhupada had said different things. He was, wherever he was, he said, I am in Vrindavan. He was in the Bowery, he said he was in Vrindavan. Yeah, he was also traveling everywhere. And I guess he said, wherever I'm in the association of devotees, we're at home. Where is home? Ultimately, where Krishna is the center, I guess, in a deeper way, we can say it like that. So yeah, Srila Prabhupada was, wherever he was home. Prabhupada said, I'm like a cow, you can take me anywhere and I'll give milk. So Prabhupada was just traveling everywhere and just giving Krishna consciousness. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
With reference to the comment about the golden age, I think Srinivas, he hit the nail on the head. He said, the golden age is here and now. You just got to take it.
Yeah, once there was a Swami and then there was one devotee and he was like, he was getting into like Kali Yuga Katha. You know Kali Yuga Katha? It's like, oh, it's so bad and this crisis and that crisis and this government thing and that conspiracy and it was Kali Yuga and it's Kali Yuga and it's so bad, it's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga and the age of darkness. And the Swami just looked at him and he said, Kali Yuga? It's not Kali Yuga. This is Chaitanya Yuga. And so that was nice because it was almost like, yeah, you can get into Kali Yuga Katha or you can think this is Chaitanya Yuga. And when you think that this is Chaitanya Yuga, then it's like, yeah, the silver lining, the golden lining, the golden lining on the dark clouds of Kali Yuga. So yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, we have to focus on that. That is a great opportunity. The Bhagavatam says the demigods are queuing up. The demigods are queuing up to take birth in Kali Yuga. Because Asti Hyeko Mahan Guna Kirtanai Dev Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambraje. The great quality is just by chanting Krishna's names, one can be freed from all material influence. So simple. Simple but not easy. Hare Krishna. Okay, yeah, right. Any from the ladies' side? Anyone would like? Okay, Rasa Raj. I think Rasa Raj wants to. Maybe the last question.
Hare Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada said we're not Bhajananandis, we're Goshtanandis. And I was just relating it to this point that we have to broaden and deepen and constantly preach. Does that mean a Goshtanandi is higher than a Bhajanandi? Or it gives more mercy than a Bhajanandi? Or because that otherwise, if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't leave us to do so much preaching, maybe we won't get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, if he made it all over the world, everyone would have a chance to be a Bhajananandi, but no one would have a chance to be a Goshtanandi.
Are we Bhajananandis or Goshtanandis? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the best Goshtanandi is the Bhajananandi who preaches. That was very interesting because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Prabhupada, you would not generally call them Bhajananandis. They were fearless, intrepid preachers. But what did they both do? I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, for what was it, 11 years, 1 billion names of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, for 6 years in Radha Damodar, just praying, writing, meditating, beseeching Rupa Goswami for mercy. A lifetime in preparation. They were for sure Goshtanandis. But what will you give to the world? What will we give to the world if we don't have anything within us? We have to invest. We have to connect. We have to experience. we have to have our heart touched by Krishna. And then we may be able to become instruments by the Lord's mercy to touch the heart of others. And so we don't become bhajananandis in totality, but we do elements of bhajan in order to empower our service, which is to try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And so, yes, we must be, as they say in colloquial English, the real McCoy. You have to be the real thing. Because prachar without achar is just PR. You preach, but you don't have achar, you don't have substance, you don't have good character, you have not realization of what you're speaking. All you will be able to do is make some presentation, but it won't touch the heart. Therefore, the words of a sadhu are powerful. Bhagavatam says, Tato du sanga mutsrija sadhu satseta buddhiman shanta evasya chindanti mano vyasangam uktibi. The words of a sadhu are razor sharp. They have the power, mano vyasangam uktibi, they have the power to sever the attachments within someone's mind. Because they've sharpened the sword. They've sharpened the sword, isn't it? There's that famous story of the person who's just sawing and sawing and sawing, and then it's like he's cutting less and less trees every day. So a person comes, why don't you go and like sharpen your sword? And he says, no, what are you talking about? I've got so many trees to cut. Yes, my friend, you may work hard, but if you don't sharpen the sword, you will become more and more ineffective. So yes, we're not bhajananandis, but we must. Yes, Vishwambhapru, he is a Maharati.
I wonder, that it's a good question. And shed a little bit of light. There is no difference, really, in what, on a higher level, between bhajananandi and gostianandi. Because I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, one who preach is still on bhajanakriya stage. You know, it's like purifying is an artha, but at the same time, it's purifying other people. So, like you said, you correctly, that, you know, bhajan, it's worship of the Lord, which is an inclusive. It's kind of a boundary, you know, for yourself, for your upliftment. But preaching is still a bhajan, but it's an extended bhajan. You don't just purify yourself, but you purify, you know, other people. That's why anarthanibri bhajanakriya. Bhajanakriya means, you know, devotional service, which is preaching, hearing, chanting, and you still carry on, you know, getting rid of the anartha, anartha nivritti. So you could say it's interdependent.
Yes.
It's
very nice.
It's interdependent activity. You know, bhajan, I can go home, you know, and chant to purify myself. And I can go out distributing a few books. I carry on chanting to purify myself and the people. That is why there is, otherwise, you know, we create classification, us and them, you know. Pujari could feel discouraged. Yeah. Oh, I'm supposed, you know, it's like they're minimizing my bhajan. But actually, you know, the pujari is making Krishna beautiful for the people to come, and also engaging in bhajanakriya. He's also preaching.
It's a beautiful point. I was thinking, like, Prabhupada's purports were his preaching to the world, but Prabhupada also said, my purports are my devotional ecstasies. So that's very interesting, isn't it? In one sense, it's like the purports are there to save the world, but the purports are also the expression of Prabhupada's own devotional ecstasy. So is it bhajan or is it preaching? In one sense, it's both, because it's a samadhi. And on the other side, I really appreciate your point. Like, if you take someone like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who we could say we may classify as a bhajanandi in those strict terms. But if you think about it, what did Gaur Kishore Das Babaji do? I mean, he was a bhajanandi, but what did he do? It's said that by the power of his chanting, he was holding off the effects of Kali Yuga. I mean, that's big preaching, yeah? That's like, you know... And he paid one, exactly, yeah.
He made 60,000.
Exactly, yeah. So that's the beautiful thing, that these ultimately come together. So that's very nice, isn't it? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur integrates them. Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for your kind attention. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.